Good morning.
Good morning.
Today's scripture is Philippians 4, 2 to 3. Words of encouragement. Now I appeal to Euodia and Sinct, please, because you belong to the Lord, settle your disagreement. And I ask you, my true partner, to help these two women, for they worked hard with me in telling others the good news. They worked along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are written in the book of life.
So this is the second in our series on relationships. And as Jennifer read to us this morning, this comes from Philippians 4, and it's about these two women, Euodia and Syntyche, in this Philippian church. And we don't know what it was, but they're not getting along. And it becomes very apparent in what Paul says that there's something that they need to get right between them. We'll come to that in a minute. Several years ago, here in Merced, I conducted a wedding for some Kiwanis friends. It was a retired couple. The new wife was the nurse and had nursed the husband's first wife for years through an illness that ultimately led to her death. And after her death, this relationship, which had been friendship and healthy and all that sort of stuff, began to develop and mature, and they got married. They asked me to do it. I was very honored. So it was a church building I'd never been in. And so I go on Friday night or whatever night it was, for the rehearsal, and the first two people I met in the building were the kind of the wedding planner, church administrator kind of woman person, and the organist. And you could feel something in the air. Couldn't put your finger on it, you couldn't touch it, but it was there. Well, this had happened before this occasion. The organist had left that church and gone to another church. And so she was back as a guest organist because they wanted her to play. It was modern-day Euodia and Syntyche, these two women. And the church felt it. You think that it's personal, you think that it's private, but it's not. And if you talk to anybody in that church, they would say, yeah, we know about Euodia and Syntyche. We know about them. We felt it. We've seen how it affects church life. At multiple levels, these kinds of crossed interactions create sad relationships. The tragic breaking apart of relationships, of people who formerly loved each other, or so they said, because of our humanness, because of our sometimes inability to work things through and get along with each other. It's broken. So I named this sermon today, Settle Your Brouhaha, because that's what Paul is saying to Euodia and Syntyche. He's saying to them, would you guys just grow up? Would you straighten this up and act like adults? Would you take responsibility for this relationship that you have? So here's the reason for this sermon. Here's what informed this. I think that there is widespread erosion. In fact, Erica and I were talking about this earlier. Widespread erosion of the most basic skills of human interaction. That's my premise. You look at it at the workplace. I think that was last week. I told you about Jonae Pistoresi, who teaches a course at Merced College about the problems in the workplace that are caused by four generations now occupying the same office. And it's disruptive, and it makes the workplace less profitable and less efficient and less the kind of place that you want to be because of all this disruption. So we see it all across the board. We see it in neighborhoods, we see it in marriages, we see it in churches, and on and on and on. And I'd like to suggest four ways that we see a breakdown that contributes to this. One is the failure to eat together a family meal at least once a day. Problematic. When our son was at home growing up, he had good friends from a really wonderful family that we loved a great deal. And he would go over to their house, and they didn't eat together. They each had a television in their room, and so they would fill their plates up, and off they would go to their separate rooms to watch whatever football game they wanted to watch or play whatever video game they wanted to play, and they didn't eat together. And Jonathan used to be mystified by that, the fact that they didn't eat together. A second breakdown is in the loss of the ability to have chit-chat. And I include in that looking at another human being eye to eye. You think about all the places where people no longer look at you eye to eye. We worked at a church in Kentucky. We had this one elder named Leroy. And Leroy would come in my office, and the window's here, and I'm back here at my desk. And he would stand like this and talk to me. Used to drive me nuts. It's like you wanted to grab him by the cheeks and say, Leroy, would you please turn around and look at me? I'm not outside on the parking lot. Learning to chit-chat means learning to be curious about the other. I belonged to an organization for several years here in Merced called Business Network International. One of the things that we did in our chapter is we did what we call dance cards. And a dance card was going out for coffee or going out to have lunch. And the goal of this dance card was to talk to the other person about what they did so that we could market for them. That was the whole point, is that we marketed for each other. So I did an experiment. In a lunch, you're supposed to spend 30 minutes talking about one person's business and 30 about the other. And so my experiment was, I wonder how long it will take them to quit talking about themselves. And so I would ask leading questions, you know, tell me about your business, you know, what about this or what about that. And they'd yammer on about their business. And 1 hour later, we would leave lunch, myself never having said a word about LifeSpring. And I would go, isn't that interesting? And I found that to be more true than not. My friend Jim Henderson says people are attention junkies. And we really are. We like to talk about ourselves. So in learning to chit-chat, it means that we learn to ask questions. We learn to show interest. We learn to look into the eyes of the other and say, tell me what that's like. Tell me what you do. What did you think about that? What are you reading? What's your hobby? Wonderful questions. The third is learning basic courtesies, or maybe I should say forgetting basic courtesies. So our society is becoming cretinous. We lack the common courtesies of respect and generosity and decency. We've forgotten how to do that. Now, I think this is particularly opportunistic for Christians, because if Christians step up and start showing these sorts of virtues to other people, you know what happens? People go, wow, I've never seen that before. I've never been treated that way before. And suddenly your life has such credibility in a world where no one else knows how to do that. Gratitude's one of the things that I think we've not learned. Robin and I were talking about this earlier, and I said, make sure you understand this is not addressed to what we were just talking about. I did a wedding for a young woman, and her wedding was graciously supplied by friends. Friends brought all the food. A friend provided DJ skills. Another friend provided a venue, a lovely backyard. Really didn't cost the bride much, if anything, for this wedding. You know how she said thank you? Facebook. And I wanted to go, how could you do that? How could you do that? Didn't all of this effort that was done for you, didn't it call for something more than a Facebook post? Now, to her defense, she probably didn't grow up hearing that message. She didn't grow up hearing folks say, you really ought to be grateful. And then the third one. So eating together, learning the skill of chit-chat, learning basic courtesies, and number four, negotiating problems. Okay, we're human beings, and we're going to have problems. It's just a reality. And in healthy families, people get angry with each other. They do. You know, it's not this super clean place. It's people get mad. Things happen. And what children have an opportunity to see is they're in a perfect laboratory for seeing how people work things out. That's why I think quantity time is more important than quality time, as people used to talk about in the 80s. Because it's only in quantity time that you get to watch your parents do this in their relationship. It's only in quantity time that you get to see how they work things out, how they get angry, how they express it. It's a great laboratory. It's really important for us to witness that. I'm really amazed at the false intimacy that I see on Facebook. It's don't be deceived by it. It's false intimacy. You know, if I get on Facebook and puke all over my Facebook wall. That's what it amounts to. It's not false intimacy. I mean, it's not real intimacy. It's false. It becomes real when I sit down with Ed and I say, Ed, I'm really angry with you. And Ed and I get to talk about it. And guess what happens to our relationship? It grows stronger. Because it's real. Facebook does not accomplish anything. It's a nice place to share your pictures when you, of your grandkids or, you know, that sort of stuff. But in terms of real relationship, don't be deceived. The central problem in our Facebook world may be seen in the contrast between Paul, what Paul writes about sort of the Christ mindset. And he says this in Philippians 2. Christ did not count equality with God as something to be held on to. New Revised says something to cling to. Christ didn't cling to it, saying, oh, I'm not going to give this up. He gave it up. And he says, he took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. Wow. But if you'll listen, you'll see the opposite being modeled on The Voice and American Idol and all those reality programs. This is a typical speech. I want to thank my parents for everything that they did to help me with my music career. They sacrificed so much for me, and I'm happy that I can now appear on The Voice or wherever, where I'm sure I'm going to win first prize and be famous. Does that sound like the Christ point of view? It doesn't, does it? There's no Christ in that. It's all me. I'm doing this for me. My parents did this for me. And going forward, it's all going to be about me. You see the corrupting influence of our societal selfie that we're taking. You know, selfie is such a good word for describing what we do. Some people accuse me of being too critical here, but we don't even here. I'll do it anyway. I'll tell you anyway. You can throw rocks at me if you want to. But I don't even think we know how to answer thank you. You know, somebody says thank you to us, and they're telling us something about what's going on inside them. Thank you. You touched me, or that was helpful to me. Or, and we say something like, ah, no problem. But that's no recognition of what's been said to us. It'd be far more appropriate to say, you're welcome. I was glad to do that. Or I'm really thankful that your life was made better by what I did. There's human connection in that. There's this great opportunity for us to join with the spirit of another person in the way that we talk to them. When I say, no problem, it really kind of takes the focus back on me. Oh, you know, it didn't cause me any problems. If it had been problematic, I wouldn't have done it. It's kind of implied, right? And another typical thing of our selfie world is the way we act like a gift is deserved or expected. I think that's one of the problems with our whole gratitude thing. If anything, we almost get bent, put out of place, if I'm going to be inconvenienced in my gratitude. Well, back to Yodi and Syntyche. We don't know what the issue was. I hope what I've done for you is I've sort of built a nest for you to think about these two women, because we live in a very self-centered world that has forgotten how to, or maybe never ever knew, how to create community and how to build other people up in that community, how to join emotionally with other people in that community. And we don't know what's going on with these two women. Paul didn't say. We just know that something's wrong. And Paul says to them, I want you to be same-minded. I want you to be same-minded. Paul wasn't asking them to agree on everything. That's not what he's talking about. But you know, I have a friend who I love, and he's an atheist, and I'm a believer. Are we same-minded in the way you would normally think? No. But there's this joining, this connection. You see what I'm saying here? And I think that's what Paul is asking Euodia Syntyche to do. You know, maybe you don't like the way the organist played the music at church, but that doesn't matter. The fact is that at a deeper level, there's this same-mindedness going on. I think in order to have such a destructive argument, there must have been two factors. One is a lack of concern about harmony. And the other is an inflated self-interest. So I'm more concerned about the fact that I didn't like that music. Back during the 80s in the worship wars, we got a lot of that sort of thing. If you can believe that at church. People arguing over all this newfangled music that was coming down the pike, and it didn't sound like the music that they grew up with. And come hell or high water, they're going to fight for the music that they wanted. And Paul says, that's not the way the church works. Church is concerned about harmony. Now, it's not talk when I say harmony, it doesn't mean that you're selling out on really important things. That's not the point. But it's certainly not saying that you should argue for things that are just self-interest. My way or the highway, I'm not willing to give ground. How is that different from the person who goes on Facebook, however? And spews. Perhaps it's about some person who does XYZ and they don't like it, or the boss who fired them, or the politician with whom they disagree. And most of the time, these diatribes include foul language, ultimatums. Ultimatums will get you nowhere in your relationships with people, or unfounded judgments. Unfounded judgments. How often do you hear that? Oh, I know what kind of person you are because you have that political point of view. You're just a this, that, or the other. Well, you don't know that. You don't know that. Once the statement or opinion or verbal assault, it is offered, it sort of acts like the Syrian gas attacks that can't be recalled. And the gas goes out and it does all this damage and people are now dead or gasping on the ground because of the gas. Or it's like a pillow broken in the wind, feather pillow, and the feathers go everywhere and you can't pull them back. Damage is done. What Paul asks of Euodia and Syntyche is really quite extraordinary. Phronein in curio. Self-minded in the Lord. In curio is in the Lord. Phronein is, same-minded, not self-minded. Same-minded. So if I'm of the same mind, I learn compromise. If we're going to get along in this world, we have to compromise. Congress needs to learn this. I want to go down there and just grab some people by the lapels and say, would you quit this fighting? Start including each other. American Leadership Forum has a term. It's called setting the table. And they say, ALF philosophy is, if you leave somebody out of the table, you've not set the table. If there's a voice that's not there, there's something that you're missing that you could learn from. And so, at any ALF class, you will find a multitude of ethnic groups. You will find a multitude of sexual orientation. You'll find political difference. It will all be there because ALF says, correctly, that's how you set the table. And you listen. But mindset of the world is hold your ground and don't give in. Being of the same mind says, seek to preserve relationships. Seek to preserve relationships. So if I have the mind of Christ and if I am in church doing what Christ has called me to do, then it means I have regard for each one of you. And if I lose one of you, John Donne says, Europe is the less. If a clod be washed away to the sea, Europe is the less. It's minus one clod. And that's what we all do. We're all part of this. That's why if Rich doesn't show up next Sunday and you know, he just decides to sleep in, my, what we've lost, right? In the say whatever you want to say world, we treat the other as an enemy. Oh. Yeah. I know what Robin is politically. I can't be her friend, right? I mean, isn't that what we say? In the same mind column, governed by the Christ image. You know, Paul. We've already read what Paul said about that. In the say whatever you want to say category, it's groupthink, it's mindless, and immature. And so we go with the group and we don't think for ourselves. In the be of the same mind group, we take personal responsibility for who we are and what we say. Don't you love it when somebody takes responsibility? When somebody's willing to say, hey, I screwed up. I need to make that right. Wow, that takes such courage to do that. Regardless of whatever you may think about Al Franken, I really admire the guy. who said, staying in this will not help my party or my issues. I resign. Wow. And it didn't take some long, drawn-out thing. It didn't take a campaign to get him out of office. He said, this is the right thing to do. And then last, under the say whatever you want to say category, victim mentality, you've hurt me, it's not my responsibility. Well, what does this look like at church? And I'll finish after this. It stays connected. Whatever the issue is, if it appears that Yodi and Sintachi had started the slide away from each other. But if we do what Christ calls us to do, it means we stay connected. Now, sometimes that's uncomfortable. But it's in the staying connected that we learn and we grow. It is forgiving. Some people think forgiving means forgetting. Forget that. Forgiving is not forgetting. Forgiving is changing your mindset toward the other person. That's what it is. It makes allowance for the other's faults. I hate it when I hear somebody ragging on another person and they give no credit for whatever that person may be dealing with in their life. I really think that's judging, actually. It's what I think that is. And it is connected, loving, and patient. Listen, we human beings require a boatload of patience. And the word hupomone, which is the word patience in the Greek, means long-suffering. If I'm patient, it means, I get tickled sometimes. You've been at a department store and you've waited and the person that's waiting on you is doing this and doing that, and they come back and say to you, thank you for being patient, and I want to go, darling, patient is not what you describe what I'm doing right now. I am tolerating, but I'm not patient. And if I'm patient, it means that I'm struggling through this with you. It means I'm here because I want to be. And I want to walk beside you through this, whatever it is you're going through. I'll finish the sermon with a warning, and then we'll pray. And the warning, we stood with Yodi and Sintachi, but I think that Facebook is a symbol of the erosion of some important things in our society. There's something seductive about Facebook. So easy to use, isn't it? You can get on board and you can express an opinion and send it out to the world. So easy. It's alluring. It's deceptive. And I think that some good is going to be created by my expressing that. But in point of fact, all I'm doing is disrupting relationships. I'm tearing apart fabric that shouldn't be messed with. It insulates us from the hard work of being community. It just insulates us. And so I can sit at home and type on my keyboard, and I don't have to look you in the eye. I can call you names. I can impugn your motives. I can make judgments about you and never be called into account. Sort of like the guy that flips you off on the highway as he speeds by you. Never has to deal with you as a human being. It keeps us from using the muscles, number three, that would make us mature people. You know, this is muscular work. This is heavy lifting that we're talking about. I have to give you a disclaimer. I like our chat, our threads that we have going, but on Facebook Messenger, but there's times that I don't like them. Sometimes I don't think they're good for us. Because it's so easy to be glib, trite, even irritated. And I think in moments of weakness, I've seen Lifespringer say some pretty snarky things on our messenger. And I go, oh. And you know, if they were sitting across the table, they wouldn't be saying those things in that way. Just wouldn't happen. My friend Jim Henderson says when people become friends, the rules change. And he's talking about eyeball-to-eyeball stuff. It's what he's talking about. Number four, the last warning, it enables blaming others for problems. Maybe the problem lies with me. Maybe that's where it is. And so I need to address that, and I need to sit across the table from someone else and say, help me deal with this. What do you see? Again, that's heavy lifting. It takes courage. But what it does is it creates strong and muscular relationships that can withstand anything if we can do that. So let's end this sermon with a prayer. Dear Father, we want to be like Christ, who did not cling to equality with you, but took up a slave's role in life here. Please help us to not be seduced by the spirit of the age. May we not be Facebook Christians, but rather seek the authentic relationships for which Christ died. In Jesus' name I pray this. Amen.